This week on Desert Digest, the dining podcast of Phoenix Magazine, we'll have slow food mastermind Claudio Urcioli of Pala in studio to talk about his new restaurant and all the great work he's done in the Valley dining scene, along with news and notes and other things here on Desert Digest. Welcome to Desert Digest, the dining podcast, Phoenix Magazine. I'm Craig, the editor, and here with Leah Lemoine, the managing editor. Hey, Leah.
Hey, Craig.
And we also have a very, very special guest in studio today. The champion of slow food in the Valley, the man who brought burrata to the Valley, in the red corner, weighing in at, I don't know how many pounds, I'm not going to say, from Salerno, Italy, Claudio Urcioli. Hey, Claudio.
Hey, how are you, man?
It's good to see you.
Good to see you.
I was going to confirm this beforehand. Is it Urcioli or Urcioli?
Urcioli, yeah, that's good.
Urcioli, right.
So the CI, chi in Italian, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right, there you go. The CI makes the chi. And that is the last time I'll ever ask you that question, I hope. It's COVID brain fog.
So it's not an easy last name, the CIU sound. It's not very common, so it's kind of an old school last name.
It is an old school last name. You know, you're talking to a guy whose last name is Utier, so I get it. We're going to talk about, you know, we'd have you here anyway just to talk because we love you, but there is a reason that we have you in this particular week. Your new restaurant is opening, Pala downtown, sort of new. You know, people who love your original Pala there on 24th Street. But different concepts. So we'll talk about all that and get in maybe a little bit of your history as a chef here in the Valley. But first, we're going to do our news and notes section of the podcast. We call it Tip of the Tongue. And not a lot happening this week in news. I mean, your restaurant opening is probably the biggest bit of dining news. But there was another prominent chef, also Italian, who opened a restaurant, Alex Strada. Valley's only current Michelin starred chef, I think. You know, he got a couple of Michelin stars in Vegas when he was working there a couple decades ago. But he, his new restaurant, Campo Italian Bistro and Bar in Scottsdale, is opening. And, you know, Leah, you wrote about this week. Interesting thing about, you know, he had a previous concept there called Strada Kitchen, mm-hmm. which is kind of health food thrust. You know, he kind of came up doing, you know, the rich fine dining food, but he, you know, he beat cancer and kind of turned his personal health around. So I think, you know, grain bowls and that kind of cuisine's more his bag right now. But his new concept here is Campo Italian. It sounds like a farmhouse Italian concept, a lot of grilled meats, things like that, rustic pasta. But he's also partnering with Genuine Concepts now, which is the restaurant group behind the Vig and the Womack, and Little Woody there on 7th Street. And they're, I think, doing, you know, the marketing and probably the background for me. That's an interesting pairing there. Any insights, Claudio, like in terms of, you know, a chef partnering with the restaurant group, what you get out of that?
I think Alex, I saw him maybe a couple of weeks ago, and he was telling me about the original concept. And I think it didn't really work maybe for that area. I feel like, for me at least, no, every part of Phoenix is different and every area likes certain things. So if I look at that area, you know, Andreoli is right there. So maybe the people in that area wanted more an Italian old school, you know, like he's doing now.
Right.
Maybe the healthy cuisine over the counter, the original concept didn't, you know, translate in numbers for the group.
And, right.
I know this guy of the Vig, you know, they do big numbers and they want to just have a certain form of volume and develop a menu that, you know, will attract the people with, I think, dishes that maybe they are more easy to recognize than they feel comfortable about it. You know, so I think Alex went in that direction and,
yeah.
I like the name Campo, and I seen a little bit of the menu briefly online, and you know it's very classic, no?
It seems super appealing, and I was a big fan of it.
Exactly. I don't know what it is, or you know, I don't know if I want to try that. Everything seems like for the crowd. Good.
I always loved his short rib with that, you know, red wine shellac, and, you know, not healthy, but delicious. So, you know, I was kind of happy to see him go towards back towards kind of the richer food.
Yeah, I think
so.
People want to feel comfortable. They go in a place like that. I think the quality is, you know, of course, of a star Michelin restaurant, the choosing of the raw material, and then the classic dishes of Italian cooking. I mean, there is nothing you really need to change or,
right,
you know, they're not going wrong. People love that, and they will always be happy to eat that.
Yeah, and they do a great job at Genuine over there, getting the word out and, you know, creating a good customer experience. So excited to try that restaurant. Also opening this week in the Valley, By the Bucket, which is a spaghetti and meatball concept from Payson originally. And, you know, I think it's the truth in advertising principle. It is served in a bucket, the spaghetti and the meatballs, which is, you know, fun. And if you have kids, I think they'll get a kick out of it. You just, you know, stick the tongs into the bucket and put it on the plate. I mean, my one thing is, you know, and this sounds fun for kids. My one thing is spaghetti is easy to make, right? You can, if you throw it in the, in the water at home and, you know, you find a decent sauce and you're done. So, I mean, that would be the one reason I might not visit, just because, well, I could do, I mean, that is literally the easiest meal you can make. But sometimes when you have 10 kids, you know, nothing's easy. I get that. I don't know. It's fun. What do you think, Leah?
Definitely interesting and definitely not traditionally Italian, as Claudio can attest.
Yeah, what do you think, Claudio? Do you have any bucket?
No, I'm trying to think how you're going to take them out of the bucket. You know, you need big tongs, but then the sauce is going to go all on the bottom. I don't know. I want to see that.
How you eat it with a shovel, like a beach.
The bucket. I always think a bucket, and I think beers, you know, Corona, yeah, whatever, like in a bucket. But I don't know about pasta in a bucket. But
I don't know. I mean, you might want to look into this for your restaurants, for Paula. I mean, I could see, you know, I could see grain bowl by the bucket. Mediterranean shrimp.
Yeah,
I would eat shrimp by the bucket.
Yeah, sure. Me too, actually. Especially Claudio's shrimp.
Yes. So, yes, so good.
I don't know. Let us know how it goes. And, you know, I tell you what, we will guarantee you media support. Yeah. If you make that leap. Anyway, that's all I had for news this week. That's in Ahwatukee, by the way, opening up. Segueing into the other big restaurant opening, Paula. Now, I remember when I first interviewed you, Claudio, I kind of teased you about something. You're obviously incredibly talented. The Valley loves you. One of the people that pioneered the slow food concept, which you can talk about, but also you brought some of those, you know, wonderful Italian staples to the Valley. You know, I think you've had burrata on the menu, that, you know, which is a burrata is a even creamier, more ridiculously decadent mozzarella, right? Mm-hmm. And it was everywhere in the Valley for a while. I mean, it still is. Yeah. But you were promiscuous. You went from so many different restaurants. You were in different point of view. Taggia, Prado, Noca. So I teased you about it and you were so very gracious, but you've obviously found your forever home with Paula, which is your first restaurant you owned, I think, right?
Yeah. No, I have a small percentage of ownership with Omar. And I think in my career, you know, traveling and moving around was always what I always wanted to do. When I left Italy, I went to California and I was very lucky. And I would say, you know, blessed to work in great operation, you know, I would say Four Seasons, right, Continental Hotel. I worked with Nancy Silverton. And I think I did everything in stages where I was at least for 4 or 5 years. We did for now, I was for 9 years. And I mean, I came to the U.S. to travel and, you know, I was in Phoenix coming out of Kimpton, you know, from San Francisco. Then they sent me to a hotel in Washington, D.C. with Taggia concept.
What year was that when you came to Phoenix? You remember, or generally?
Yeah, it was, I want to say 2006 or 2005.
Right.
When we took over Kaleo Hotel, which is on Chaparral. I think now it's a different hotel. So, you know, while I was with them, I got offered a job, you know, to go to different point of view.
And right. That was not, that's a, the wonderful restaurant at which resort is that? There in North Central Phoenix.
It's a Hilton.
Right, right.
Yeah, yeah.
And so it does have a wonderful view.
No, it was something interesting. I felt like coming out of Kingston when I went in Hilton, it was very corporate structured. So I didn't really last that too long because you really need to follow, you know, a huge corporation guidelines, which is Hilton.
And a little bit repressive in terms of your creativity.
You know, yes, I would say, I don't know if it's oppressive, the word is just, you got to get used to it. And some people love that because it's very structured. And coming right. from where there was really a separation of restaurant operation and hotel operation, that was very, very good for us. You know, the Hilton, it was a bit difficult for me to manage. And I was lucky to go working for Intercontinental because the F&B director was Basque. The executive chef was Italian.
Oh, cool. GM
was Italian. So there was
international flavor.
Yes, and they were very open to have Prado to be whatever we wanted to be, with, of course, a big Spanish influence due to the F&B being Spanish. So that was great. But then, you know, that hotel got sold, and for me, there was really not too much to do with the new company. Was very different. And all the Intercontinental people left. So I
Did that become the Monte Lucia?
No, Monte Lucia was always our name. It became another hotel chain that
gotcha.
Was a small hotel chain that basically bought
the Monte Lucia. Gotcha.
Because we were just managing the property, and the guy that built it kind of went bankrupt. So the hotel had to be, it was owned by Deutsche Bank. So then Deutsche Bank sold it to a small hotel chain.
Okay.
And I think Alex Strada went to work there for a little bit too. There's been a lot of changes in
that's the, right. Alex was there for a while, yeah.
I don't know. I mean, honestly.
And then you
kind of now.
Yeah. No, and then you went to Noka for a while, worked with Chris, Curtis, is that his name?
I worked with Elliot, which was the owner. After I left Intercontinental, I helped Chris Bianco a little bit because he was doing some work with Jamie Oliver in England. I don't know if you remember.
Yeah, so you kind of filled in for him then.
A little bit because he was really working hard in London. So I helped him because, you know, we were friends. Let me say, you want to help me out to kind of oversee my two restaurants? Then we opened an Italian restaurant together, which now it's, I think,
Tratto.
You know, the Ria Tratto, the original Tratto space was very small. Then they expand that. So it was really fun to work with him. And, of course, then he came back. And I went to work in Noka because, you know, working with Chris, it was great. But
in Noka, right.
Yeah, Noka was kind of a good challenge because Elio wanted to do Italian food. It was kind of a good space for me to be there and a lot of creativity, you know.
Right.
But then again, there was an economic crisis and that kind of fine dining.
2009, 2010, yeah.
It was really tough to sell the kind of food. And Elio went and he started to do Noka Witch, which opened at the airport.
That's right.
Up in Tempe, and for me it was like, you know, I didn't really want to do that kind of sandwich shop.
Right.
So I did with Jason, we opened Noble Bread. So it was...
That's right, you worked at Noble, yeah. And that was a roaring success.
Yeah, so we started making bread in a garage, then we moved on McDowell, and you know, it was a lot of fun. And
you collaborated with an amazing assortment of talents here in the Valley. And this all kind of led to Pa La, which you opened just across the street from Noble Bread there on...
Yeah, because at that point, the problem on that lease was that the owner of the building needed the building back. Because
right.
he had to make beef jerky, so we were, you know...
for you wanted to make beef jerky?
Yeah, he was making sausage, so all that property was... kind of a sausage production, and the beef jerky for some reason in that period it was very popular, and he needed space to increase volume of production.
You literally were evicted by a sausage fest. All right, well,
yeah. He was a great landlord. He was really nice. So we kept the bakery there, and Jason wanted to move close to the original location. And, you know, Omar used to come and eat very often, say, look, I got a similar space up the street that's empty, and you can do whatever you want. So for me, it was kind of...
Yeah, it was a no-brainer. And it was a perfect restaurant for the time, because, as you said, fine dining had kind of lost its, you know, its luster. And yeah. Pala has food that you would eat in a you know, fancy restaurant. But it's in a unpretentious environment. Yeah. It's fast casual. It's affordable. It just was the, you know, it hit the spot, so to speak.
So that was kind of a continuation of the sandwich shop. And I, you know, I had a little bit more space, so I put the wood-burning oven and the wood-burning grill so I could do the, you know, the seafood concept, which is something I always wanted to do that I could not do in the sandwich shop because there was not really the right fit. So, you know, Pala 24 was what I always liked to do, very casual over the counter. You know, I want to really get out of the, you know, the fine dining of Noka or the hotel where you have to have a certain, you know, formality in eating. And I still like to go home and eat outside at the port of Genova, you know, where you don't sit down. So you can have great food in, you know, little spaces where there is good quality or very good quality at a good price, but not too formal, you know. So
yeah, absolutely. And now, you opened Pala in like 2015, 16? 16, right? So
and I still have the original guys, everybody that worked with me is there. So it's been tough for us to go through COVID, but not having that many employees, and I had to switch a lot to the food to go, which I never really did.
Right.
And, you know, we survived, and now slowly, you know, we're getting back with the same crew that started with me. So it's for me, it's pretty special.
Your co-owner, your business partner, is next door there. Remind me of his name.
Omar Alvarez, yeah, and he owns the Torta Patime. So
that's right. And he's worked with us before in food festivals. He's a great guy. And it's Torta's Patime.
Torta Patime, yeah, it's right. A Mexican concept that is. Few locations, and he has his central kitchen next to Pala. So, you know, it's very successful in that, you know, style of food.
Sector, yeah, right. No, they are excellent tortas. Now, is he also your partner in the new restaurant downtown? Is he the...
Yes. So there is the partner there with another partner. They basically, like I say, refurbished this old building. I think it's one of the oldest buildings in downtown.
Right. That's right. For the readers or listeners, rather, right across the street from the basketball arena on Washington. Is that?
Yeah, it's on 132 Washington between 1st and I think 3rd Street. And it was an original, you know, building. I don't know. I think it was like a lounge / restaurant. So the restaurant was already there.
I remember going to like some dance parties there back in the day.
Yeah. I think that's what it was. When I went there in the beginning, there was a lot of, you know, things to play music and stuff. So they really did a great job with an architect and an interior designer to make it kind of, it's not too fancy, but it's not also too trattoria style. No, it's kind of in the middle. It's very comfortable. And upstairs, they have an original bar that it's really cool. It's kind of an original wood bar that is pretty special to see as an architectural piece. It's been there for a while, I think. So upstairs, we're going to have a lounge and do tapas. We build a section of the bar to do small plates. And I think downstairs, we seat maybe 95 seats.
Right.
The wood-burning oven.
So you did bring the wood-burning oven over, too. I mean, so the food is created in the style of the original restaurant. I mean, are the menus pretty much identical, or are you doing more stuff at the new restaurant?
No, it's the menu. It's really geared for a sit down. So you have a good amount of tapas. We have pizza. We have pasta, seafood. Of course, it's the main focus. The chef comes from Rocacor. So Jason, a good friend of mine. I met him a while ago. We have friends in common. And, you know, used to come in Pala. So I talked to him and say, you know, we can kind of blend our culture of seafood. And, you know, we have a good... influence of Japanese ingredient, Mediterranean ingredient. So the fish is still the focal point. We have a little.
You do more. Will you do more crudos, kind of in the style Japanese?
Yeah, we just started, so we're gonna do crudos, a lot of seafood preparation in the wood burning oven, seafood pasta. But there is also, I would say, couple of dishes with meat, will be lamb. So the menu changed daily, just like Pala. And yes,
because you love sourcing, you love sourcing locally, you love sourcing well. That's kind of what slow food is all about, right? You go with the food.
For me, yeah. So it's really it's a market menu that you can create daily or keep it with some staples. And we shop, you know, at the farmers market. We buy great fish out of California. I think, you know, it's following the same style that I always been doing. We have a good bread program. So we do all focaccias, pizzas, baguettes, because we installed kind of a little bread oven in the back. The pasta, you know, we are kind of learning, you know, teaching the guys how to make pasta from scratch means cooking it, you know, while the order is coming in. So the pasta
is that pasta fresh.
Yeah, you know, the pasta cooker allows you to cook the pasta when the order comes in. So you have baskets, imagine a large fryer and then boiling water. So you can cook six pasta at the same time from, okay, you know, raw stage to the finishing stage. So that's a, you know, a little bit of a skill set that you have to build into the cooks. But the pasta for me is very different. You know, if you make pasta, that's the way to do it. You got to invest in the machine. It's called pasta cooker. And pizza, I think we are doing good. You know, the pizza, again, a couple of pizzas.
You have a wood-fired oven, you might as well, right?
It's actually a pizza oven, yeah.
So oh, it
just
is?
Like the one in Pala, it's made in Naples, goes to 900 degrees, and it's very versatile. You can make pizza, you can cook fish. So it's cool. A good piece of equipment, and it's right in the middle of the restaurant, so it's also kind of a showpiece when people come in. And then, like I said, the Robata grill, we bought a Japanese-style Robata grill, so we can do the skewers and everything. We can grill Japanese-style.
Mm. Well, I'm hungry. Are you, Leah, listening to all this?
Yes.
So it's kind of going to be a good blend. So we're already testing out a lot of recipes, and they come out good. Yesterday we did an octopus pizza with, you know, kind of a Japanese.
You're killing. Pizza. You're absolutely killing me here. That sounds awesome. Are you open for dinner? You're open for dinner tonight. Today's Friday. We're recording this on Friday.
Today is our first dinner, and tomorrow, and then you know, we'll see. Usually in the games, we open all day when there is the Phoenix Suns playing downtown.
Yeah, are you happy they beat the Lakers in advance? I mean, it kind of gives a little more energy to that part of the city, at least in the short term.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was a great match, and they deserve it. And they have a great team. I think he can go. I don't know. I think Denver is it's a tough team. I love basketball, but we go for the Clippers, so. My teammates always been the Clippers that nobody liked. But
Right. Well, if you beat the Lakers, you know, maybe, who knows? I'm a Lakers fan, so even bringing up the topic right now is painful for me, but I'm playing along. Leah is too.
Yeah, like basketball, I think when you look at playoffs, it's fun to watch basketball. If you like basketball, everybody plays very hard, and it's
fun. I mean, the downtown area has come so far. COVID was brutal to, you know, the energy in that part of downtown, especially because of the lack of live sports and everything. So, I mean, it's great to see you there. I mean, you know, providing that extra bandwidth in terms of what you can do and enjoy there.
People are coming downtown. There is a lot of new restaurant opening. I think the energy of downtown, like they told me, is coming back maybe in September. I talked to some friends at the convention center. There is groups coming in. So, you know,
awesome.
Of course, downtown leaves off whoever is coming, you know, to the games. Yeah. And Marley, you know, I talked to them. They've been there for 30 years. So that's pretty fantastic that the business has been around 30 years in downtown. And
absolutely. And the new stuff is great, too. Like you mentioned, Bitter and Twisted, which is not too far from your restaurant. Yeah. That would be a nice 1-2 punch. Have a you know, cocktail there. Come to Pala for dinner. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, there's tons to do And, you know, it seems like most of the businesses there did survive. They just kind of successfully went into hibernation for 12 months. And, you know,
I think if you go north in the Roosevelt, they are opening so many restaurants now in Roosevelt. Every time I drive by to go to work, I see all kinds of
something
stuff.
New. Yeah. Roosevelt.
For downtown, there is a lot of buildings. If you go to Chibo, they are building all these apartments. I think, you know, it's nice to see a downtown with people that can walk or take a scooter and go to eat without driving. No, it's
right. Yeah, the density has improved a lot, and hopefully we can reach that chain reaction.
There is people coming to Pala with their bicycle, so that makes me happy.
That's awesome.
I like scooters.
Yeah. Hey, Claudio, I have a new little thing here I'm going to do called My Readers Want to Know. Yep. Three questions for you that I know my readers are curious to hear about from you. Yeah. It's 9 p.m. on a Thursday night. You're done with your shift, or, you know, you closed up the restaurant, or maybe you left someone else to close it. You want to get a bite to eat. Where do you go? You're downtown, for instance. Or your new
For me, I like sushi. I will go to Nobu, but I think Nobu is closed.
Yeah, it is. But no, it's a good answer. And, you know, I'm sure Nobuo Fukuda, you know, prodigiously talented chef behind that restaurant, will find a new gig and a new concept.
I like that style of food. Like when I lived in LA, I used to go to izakaya, you know, like Japanese tapas. Because I don't want to eat anything too heavy. And I like a little bit of fish, a little bit of rice. And, you know, it's
right.
It's
kind of tavern. You said izakaya, it's a Japanese tavern, so good beverages, and then also like simple food, and it is a great concept. I wish we had more of them. There is a place on Indian School where Crudo used to be that is a Japanese concept now, and it has that kind of izakaya feel, and it's really good. Have you been there yet?
No. I saw the sign, and I mean, I love the style of food. So I love tapas in any kind of form, Japanese or traditional. And that's what I would like to eat, like little snacks.
Right.
For the time of the day, you know, because it's kind of getting late.
I'm going to find the name of that restaurant. It's excellent. But I agree. Second question, what's your favorite Amaro? I mean, you're from Salerno. You must have a taste for Amaros. And I'm kind of jazzed on them, in this particular moment. Do you have one?
But I like it's not from the south. I like Montenegro. So I like all these Amaro in Italy that they have a blend of different spices and all kinds of stuff. There is also, it's not really an Amaro. It's a liqueur that I like to drink. It's called Strega. It's in the Benevento area. And the actual liqueur is made with saffron. And the recipe is still a secret of the family.
Right. So aren't all Amaro recipes secret?
Yeah. And this one, I mean, it's unique because it's very yellow, but it's not any artificial. It's really saffron, and I love that. It's unique.
And what's it called again?
Strega, Strega. And I don't know if it's very common in the U.S., but it's a very, very old house. You're looking maybe the 1800s. When they started to make it, it's very common in the South. So
that sounds awesome. I'm going to look for it. I had some Montenegro last night. You mentioned that as well. Last question. Last question, Claudio. Billy Idol or Billy Joel?
I'm not, Billy Joel. Music for me, it's different than that. But I will say Billy Idol.
Billy Idol, like me too.
Style and... I think it was maybe cooler. I don't know. It's just the way when it was.
It's our generation.
I never follow both of them. It's not my style of music, but I will say, Billy Idol songs, they stick more than Billy Joel, but also some Billy Joel. Depends on the mood and what you're doing. You know, I think Billy Idol maybe.
Yeah. No, I hear what you're saying. They are different that way. What is your style of music if you're, listening?
I love all kinds of music. So I would say very folk kind of music. I like, Buena Vista Social Club from Cuba. You know, I like that trumpet, that kind of Central American vibe. I love techno from Ibiza if it's the right time, lounge music with a very good DJ.
Yep.
I like Italian music that it's more melodic, you know, that like Mannarino, no? That the words of the songs are, you know, pretty special and the sound is not too complicated. So I like all kinds of music. I will say not heavy metal, something that is too long because it gives me a little bit of an headache. It's like,
hey, me like too, it. Brother. Me too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Although you do look a little bit like Lars from Metallica.
Yeah.
So go figure. Yeah. We also have Leah has a weekly segment where she finds a food trend or a food story on a national level, and we kind of try to localize it if it's happening here or relevant here. What do you got for us this week, Leah?
Yeah, so a lot of national publications I've noticed are writing about gas station restaurants and gas station food.
Ooh, we've done that.
I know. I was a little chuffed that we scooped them. so previously we've written about, you know, several really good ones. You were on TV talking about some of them, Casa de Falafel,
right.
Gloria, New York Pizza and Wings in Mesa.
Right.
I go to this place called Crispy Crunchy. It's my favorite chicken, fried chicken. Based in Louisiana, so forgive me for not supporting local, but it's Cajun style fried chicken, and they have
Got to ask, what gas station is that?
Shell. Select Shell locations throughout the valley. The one I go to is at Cave Creek in Deer Valley-ish.
Cool.
Yeah.
And it's called Crispy Crunchy Chicken?
And with two K's, so Crispy Crunchy
Chicken. Oh, I get it. Right. Yes. That sounds good.
Yeah. Have you ever gone to any gas stations? Is that a thing in Italy? Any cultural things there?
You know, cultural for us, it's when you drive on the autostrada, you have the auto grill. So there will be great food on the side of the freeway. And it's a national brand. I mean, you'll see it if you drive on a Italian autostrada, which you have to pay for. So it's a toll road. And when you go in this auto grill, they are very regional. So if I'm driving from Liguria to Tuscany and I want to get something to eat, you know, you will be impressed. They have great sandwiches, great coffee. You know, you can really have a good meal off the freeway, you know, and it's pretty packed. So everybody, whenever they drive, they will stop and get, you know, food out of this area next to the freeway, which is very regional. So if you are in Sicily, they will have Sicilian food. If you are in Rome, they will have a staple of Roman food. But it's all standing up. So the majority of the food is sandwiches.
That's great.
Salads, everything you can eat on the go. And then they have beautiful sections of markets where you can buy local, you know, food, like in form of cookies, pasta, that is from that region. So
that's great. You know,
very cool to go in these places. And some are really, really tasty. You know, the food, it's really well done.
Anyway, what is the name of the, what's the name of the brand again? Or the
company is called Auto Grill. So A-U-T-O Grill. And, you know, it's Auto a national brand that you see. So when you get a coffee, you will see Lavazza. So the branding, it's Auto Grill, but inside they serve, you know, something that it's specific to the region.
Right.
And it's well done. So the people that work there, they, you know, they are from the region and they cook their own food. You know, it's
has a locavorian thrust to it, which is something you don't usually find in gas station restaurants, even the best ones.
I mean, I love that idea because I think just like airport food, there is a huge potential to improve the quality. You know, for me, it's always say, can we do better and improve quality of food?
Oh, you know it.
Best. I mean, you can make a great sandwiches in the gas station. I mean, if you build a little space, you have a lot of people that they can get a taco, a piece of pizza.
Definitely a dynamic market. Yeah. Speaking of which, if someone approached you, would you do a pala at Sky Harbor?
Yeah, you know, I did with Nancy when I was with La Brea. We started the one in Los Angeles, so I'm kind of familiar with how they develop this concept, but I love it. Like Tartin Bakery, all these guys going in the airport. It's better, you know, for the community to get in an airport and have quality food and diverse food. You know, at the end of the day, it's also
you bet.
It's a good module for people. Hey, I want to eat, you know, Greek food, Italian food, Japanese food. It's the airport has a lot of potential. You know, it's just you gotta, you know, develop it correctly to be I would say not fast, but people, you know, they're on the run, you know, they cannot eat and spend too much time. So you got to develop food that people can take on the plane and travel as well. But I heard about the gas station that, you know, some of the best pizza in this town came out of gas stations. I forgot where I read it, but it's something in the Midwest that for the community of that town, the best pizza was out of a gas station.
Oh, yeah.
That's me.
A lot of great barbecue in Texas, gas stations, that kind of thing. I think it's improving out here, too.
You can make great food anywhere. You just have to have the right space.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you very much for coming this week onto the show, Claudio. And I know I'm going to try to get down to your new restaurant as soon as humanly possible. And it's great that you have an expanded menu there, too. I think another review was warranted. So, you know, we're going to send our secret reviewer. I know you won't recognize her. Yeah. But in any case, it was great to have you.
Yeah, it was nice. I appreciate you. Thank you.
Next week, I think we're going to try to get the lady from Peixoto Coffee.
Julia?
Oh, yeah.
She's a friend. She's a friend of the magazine. So, I'm going to leave that one up to Leah. She's the coffee expert around these parts.
I love coffee.
But anyway, thanks for listening, everyone. And we'll see you next week.